With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
A pleasant good evening as we welcome you back, creeping up on 6:30, and a goodbye for the week on Grant and Danny. No Danny tonight. Grant Paulson with you on the Fan. Danny is in the Outer Banks, so he is living his best life at the beach. Hopefully he had a couple of donuts today. I don't know if anybody saw this. The Angels, they just find amazing ways to lose games in Major League Baseball. They've got superstars, they mash, and it doesn't matter. They hit 7 home runs against the A's last night. 7. Tied for the most in a game by any team all time. 7 solo home runs, and they lost the game. Do you get how hard it is to hit 7 home runs in a game and lose? 8-7 the final, by the way. It is always something with this team. Ohtani tosses a masterpiece. Mike Trout goes 5-for-7, and they still don't win the game. A historic number of home runs, 7 solo shots in a game, and you lose. And you don't just lose. How about you lost to the second worst team in Major League Baseball? Only team worse is the Nationals. 8-7 yesterday in their game with the A's. It's just incredible. All right, let's put a bow on this Wentz conversation. Larry's in D.C. Larry, thanks for the call. You heard what Logan Paulson said. He is starting to grow in his level of concern as Wentz in camp has scuffled. What do you think?
I mean, I'm taking it with a grain of salt. I mean, I think Ron is not good at evaluating quarterbacks and wide receivers. It's just proven. Every coach got their weakness, even Bill Belichick. I mean, look at it.
Let me ask you this, though. Does he get credit for Cam Newton? Because they drafted him 1. They could have taken someone else, and he became an MVP.
In some ways, yeah. In some ways, no. It's almost a Brady and Belichick situation. Because if you look at Cam, he also won the national championship and was a Heisman guy before him. He was the number one overall pick. I mean, you picked him number one overall. So that's kind of, you know, 6-1, half a dozen. One last thing. Last question. Do you think that Curtis Samuels is Paul Richardson reincarnated?
Gosh, I hope not. Richardson was here for a couple years and we barely knew him. I certainly hope that's not the case. I still have high hopes for Curtis Samuel this year. And I'll end up being wrong, I guess. But I'm not ready to move his name into the bin of players I'm worried about. I'm not thrilled that he's not practicing. I'm not even going to say I'm taking them at their word. They've lost that ability for me. They don't deserve that benefit of the doubt after last year. But I find what they're saying plausible. And Logan was talking about how hard that recovery is in general. Rivera being bad at evaluating quarterbacks, I think, is a hard argument to win in court. Just because, yes, I understand Cam Newton was first overall. And in the same way, I don't give Ernie Grunfeld a whole lot of credit for drafting John Wall 1. My mom would have drafted him 1. My sister would have drafted him 1. My brother, who likes Star Wars and not sports, would have drafted him 1. You turned him into an MVP. It wasn't like he didn't steadily make progress. At that time, his style of play was not ubiquitous in the game as it is now. I mean, everyone kind of thought you had to turn these guys into more traditional pocket passers, and that took some foresight, so I give him credit for that. But I also will say, in 2020, you did see Justin Herbert available there at 2, and you said, no, thank you. More recently, Mac Jones, Fields. I mean, you could have traded up and done, given up almost nothing, as we saw, to get those guys. No interest. All I want is it just acknowledged that they have put a lot of eggs in the Wentz basket. Because what I hate is when teams operate after the fact like their decisions weren't final. You know, oh, we're just kind of making moves as we go here. We're going to piece it together. This is all part of the process. No, there are small moves at quarterback and there are big moves at quarterback. This goes down as a big move at quarterback. This sets you back a year or two if it doesn't work. You don't just get to make those types of decisions every year. Bernie in Vienna, what's up?
Hey, how's it going, Grant? So I don't know. You talked about Samuels. This is what it kind of reminds me of, the soft little rumors last year about Samuels not practicing, not maybe being 100%. It's kind of the soft little rumors now about Wentz. And, I mean, I was worried when they drafted him. I'm a fan. I want it to work out. I want it to work out. But if he doesn't know how to manage himself, the players are going to know that, right? So if he doesn't know how to make himself approachable, throw more balls to McLaurin, don't create something, I'm going to be worried. And what really worries me the most, I'm going to the first game against Jacksonville, is they're down 10-0 in the second quarter and then a Heinicke chance start. And I think that's a real possibility. So I know you got other calls. I'll hang up and listen.
Appreciate you, buddy. So the Heinicke chance thing is compelling. If he is coming off of a bad preseason, off to a slow start, and Jacksonville's up, I would like to think that people will slow their roll a little bit. I know we live in 2022 and nobody reads the entire newspaper or reads the entire column or whatever. Everyone cooks with the microwave, not the crock pot. You need it now, 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 now. I would like to think, even in this town where the backup quarterback is the most popular player on the team, that it would be 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 weeks before you start to hear rumblings for Heinicke. I don't think we'll get there. Oh, by the way, it's not like you got Tom Brady waiting in the wings. We just did the Heinicke thing. We know what the Heinicke thing looks like. With all due respect to him, because I like watching him play, he's a competitor, it's not good enough. So why would you, after a quarter or a drive or 3 games or 6 games, want to go back to the thing that we just spent a year determining wasn't good enough, didn't we? I know there are some people out there who still think he got a raw deal or he should get another shot or he was just ascending or whatever it is that they think. But I think most of us who live on planet reality, no, after watching last year, this is a terrific QB2. This is a nice change of pace. Call him out of the bullpen, let him run around, and make some plays. That's what last year was for. I think part of the reason, honestly, Ron Rivera never went to Kyle Allen was so that when he got his quarterback this year, he didn't have a bunch of people chanting, Heinicke, Heinicke, because he wanted to really show everyone as long as he could last year, this is what it looks like. It's fine. If you want to go 7-10 and high five over some kind of cool scrambles, this is fine. That's not what we want. We want to do better than that. So I hope you're wrong. I've seen crazier things here. I mean, if a Heinicke chant broke out in week one against Jacksonville while they're trailing, it wouldn't be the most insane thing I've seen as a DC sports fan, but it would make the team photo. And I'm kind of hoping that doesn't happen. All right, Darius. You had a conversation with a buddy, and you started to tell me about it during the break, and I said, no, let's save this on the air. It's DC Sports related. He's a DC Sports mark. This is a take that he has. I don't know the details of it yet, but it's semi-related to topics that we do. So without further ado, I'm going to turn the floor over to you for this segment, the Homie Chat.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Grant. Yeah, so this is one of my longtime buddies. Yes, he is a member of the Homie Chat. And we had this discussion outside of the Homie Chat. So he DM'd me, I believe this was late Monday night. He works overnight, so he DMs me at weird times. So he goes, our sports franchises are weird. We have Brad Beal, who is going to be probably the greatest wizard of all time. He's going to have the most points, assists, probably already has the most made threes, and some other statistics. I'm sure he has the highest points per game for the franchise, yet he's considered a number two guy on a championship caliber team. Then we have Ryan Kerrigan. He's our sack leader, has a lot of other accolades, but isn't considered a star player. And is not probably not going to have his number retired, probably not going to make the Hall of Fame. It's just strange when these guys do their job at a high level, but don't get looked at in the same light as their peers. If Kerrigan played for another franchise and put up the same stats, would it be different? Same with Bill. If Bill played in Philly or Miami for his whole career, would it be different? So that's how his statement ended. Now, it took me a while to reply because ended up that Tuesday was a crazy day. I don't know if you remember.
What happened on Tuesday?
You know, there was this guy down the street, Josh Bell, that got traded. Some other player was thrown into the trade. We got a bunch of prospects from San Diego.
We put a player to be named later in the Josh
some
Bell
player
deal?
To be. Do you remember who that was, Ryan? I don't remember.
No. Hope it wasn't Lane Thomas.
No, it wasn't him.
Okay.
Yeah. So I ended up responding, Wednesday. Sometime late Wednesday, I ended up responding. I said, I think ultimately it comes down to playoff success or lack thereof. Kerrigan's whole career, he had three playoff appearances in 2012, 2015, and 2020. All of them were losses, and statistically, he didn't do anything. He had no sacks in any of those appearances and didn't even record a statistic in the 2020 playoff game. Not his fault solely, because obviously it's a large team sport, but what opportunity does he have to shine on a national stage with two playoff appearances in all his years here in Washington? He also did nothing noteworthy in his career. He never had one or two blow-up seasons where he went off for 18 to 20 sacks. He was just a boring and quiet 11 to 13 sacks guy. Consistent, yes, nothing wrong with that. It's just not going to make the front page of Sports Illustrated or ESPN. So I continue and say, plus, think about the primetime games that we've had over the years throughout his career. How many of those games was it just us getting beat down? People are not going to remember a two-sack performance from Kerrigan when we're getting beat down by the Eagles on Monday Night Football. Let's take J.J. Watt and Von Miller as examples. Those are two guys who came into the league around the same time as him, and when you see a lot of those graphics of them being sack leaders over this past decade, Kerrigan's usually up there with those guys. Watt had two 20-sack seasons, a 17-sack season, and a 16-sack season. He made game-changing plays in multiple playoff games throughout his career with the Texans of all teams. J.J. Watt's career sack numbers, 102. Kerrigan's career sack numbers, 95. They aren't that far off from each other, but one made it look more flashy and piled up numbers in chunks while the other did it consistently over the course of over his years.
The fact that those numbers are so close is actually stunning.
Extremely close. Like, now, that's without Arizona. That's only the Texans sacks. It doesn't include what he's done in Arizona.
And I'm a huge Kerrigan guy, but to me, like Watt and Miller on another level, these are defensive player of the year types.
Exactly.
Game wreckers. So if his argument is that Beal is one of the best in the NBA, I don't believe that. I think he's like the 22nd best player, the 17th or something. Kerrigan is as good a player as we've had here in 25 years, but he's not Von Miller, Miles Garrett, or like one of those guys. But continue. I don't think you're done yet.
So, yeah, I continue. I said Von Miller might actually be an even better example because his numbers are more consistent than what Watt did. He only had one big sack season, and that was when he had 18 in his sophomore season. The rest of the years, he had between 11 to 14, which is similar to Kerrigan, with a few 8 to 9 sacks seasons mixed in there. But Miller got to do it on a national stage more regularly because he was on a lot of playoff teams a lot early in his career. And those playoff teams had a lot of playoff success with him making game-changing plays in the spotlight. Miller's career sack numbers, 110. Again, these are only with the Denver Broncos, not with the Los Angeles Rams. 110 career sacks. Kerrigan had 95 sacks. And then I finish out my statement by saying, I'd make the same case for Bill. Bill has played in 8 playoff series throughout his career, 5 first-round series where they've gone 3-2, 0-2 in their last two first-round playoff series, and then 3 second-round playoff series where they are combined 0-3, with such little playoff success and few opportunities to show out under the spotlight. I think Bill did at one point have positive coverage nationally, but these last couple of seasons have seemed to sour the national media's view on him, and he's got a lot to prove this season.
Yeah. I think nationally people love Beal. I think so. I see this all the time. Whenever he's in these rumors, these markets are like, they want him bad. And they bring him here, L.A., Philly, whatever it is.
They do. But the key part is that they want him as a number two guy or a number three guy. They don't want him as the face of the franchise.
So that kind of gets me to my take on this exchange. It sounds like, tell me if I'm wrong, he's saying everyone thinks Beal's a number two on a championship team because he's in D.C. when really he's a number one.
That's the point he's trying to make. Yes.
Everyone thinks Kerrigan is just a good stat compiler over years, not a DPOY type because he's on the Redskins.
Exactly. That's the point he's trying to make.
I think he finished with the football team. So I would just disagree with his evaluation. I think it sounds like you did as well, but you kind of explained it in a eloquent and correct way about – why these guys here don't get a lot of love. First of all, when the primetime thing, you cannot brush past.
Cannot.
When this team plays with the country watching, it's not just like you lose. You lose in the worst, most embarrassing, gut-wrenching, humiliating ways possible.
56-14.
That was a real game that happened in primetime last year against your arch rival, by the way. That has been the case since I was a kid. I mean, this is 15 years of this. Remember when Donovan McNabb did 14 Michael Jackson different dances in one game? Remember when Michael Vick won the MVP in one night?
Oh, I remember.
I mean, LaRon Landry and DeSean Jackson get into basically a pregame fight at the 50, and then the first play of the game, LaRon Landry falls down as DeSean Jackson catches an 88-yard touchdown over his head. That night, Michael Vick scored 73 touchdowns, numbers approximate. That was the Monday Night Massacre. That was 2010. That was 12 years ago. I mean, this stuff has been happening forever. And so when these big games happen and you lose, normally in not just close fashion, but kind of embarrassing fashion, it takes a toll. And whenever they're pretty good, like was the case when they, you know, had the 7-game winning streak, got to 10-6, primetime win, playoffs, and people start to kind of get behind the team. Like last year, nationally, everyone loved this team. Mike Greenberg picked them to represent the NFC in the Super Bowl or something stupid like that. I mean, going into the season, it was insane. Dan Orlovsky's like, I've never seen a team built better than this. People can't wait to compliment anything Ron Rivera does with his team. These national people love him. They're all writing columns about how great they are last year, and they always let everyone down because they can't handle prosperity. All that adds up. All that is part of it. I think the playoffs are a big deal as well when you say they didn't get there. If you those memories in the playoffs, those performances in the playoffs are where your legacy is kind of carved out. I think that's a huge part of it.
And I think a reason why people were high on us coming into last year was because their last remnant of seeing us was Taylor Heinicke and this team going toe-to-toe with the eventual Super Bowl
exactly.
Champions.
That's, you know what? Heinicke's the perfect example. I'm glad you bring him up. People right now think Taylor Heinicke's pretty good. It's because of that Tampa Bay game.
Absolutely is.
In the playoffs when no one had ever heard of him. No one cares about last year when he had an entire season to show what he was, and we found out he's a backup quarterback. A likable backup quarterback, but a backup quarterback. But the public opinion on him is Taylor Heinicke will knock over a pylon if you let him. It was a playoff moment. It was a fleeting, cool, crazy, fun. I remember that we were doing shots in my basement in the middle of the pandemic. I'm not driving anywhere. Nowhere to go. It was amazing. It was a night. But it was a playoff night, and so people remember that.
On national TV, on NBC,
Mike
everybody
Tirico
saw
on
it,
the call.
You know?
Absolutely. It's a real thing. But I think I just disagree a little bit with the eval or the premise in general. If his premise is people are underrated because they play in D.C., then I would say, yes, that's true. Because the D.C. teams don't achieve enough to get them their flowers. But if he's saying Beal is a number one on a championship team who people think is a number two, I would say, no, Beal's a number two on a championship team. Last year, he was not even that. But hopefully he gets back to being a number two on a championship team. If he's saying Ryan Kerrigan is J.J. Watt and the people just don't see it, with all due respect, no one loves Kerrigan more than I do, that's not a thing. J.J. Watt, more impactful, dominant, game-wrecking type stuff than Ryan Kerrigan. But those are the types of things, I'm glad you brought it to our attention via the homie chat, that are interesting to me as a D.C. sports fan because I think we all feel it at times. Like, Ryan Kerrigan is totally underrated, 100%. And if Kerrigan was on the Cowboys or some terrible thing like that, his whole career would be viewed differently. Famous for being famous. And if he was on the Packers and he'd played in 11 playoff games and he has 22 playoff sacks, like Clay Matthews, fleeting, decent career, not nearly as good as Ryan Kerrigan, way bigger star at one point in time.
He has nowhere near the numbers that Kerrigan has.
Not even close. No. But what was interesting, when you compared the career numbers of Kerrigan to those other two guys, I would have just guessed J.J. Watt had 30 more sacks, you know, or Von Miller had 25 more sacks. As someone who defends Kerrigan for his consistency and legitimacy all the time, but that speaks to that at least the premise that these guys are underrated is right.
Yeah, and I think that was just I think what you said about his statement was correct. He is viewing it from they're underrated because they're in D.C. And again, I had to make the point that it's because of the lack of playoff success, because of the lack of having any kind of breakout performances on a national stage is where it ultimately comes down to. Well, I think what DC fans kind of fail to realize is the national media doesn't get to see our local 1 o'clock Fox games all the time. You know, they don't get to see our NBC Sports Washington 7 p.m. tip off against the Bucks all the time.
But it's not like 1996 anymore. Where
it's not.
If you do something, everybody knows about it.
I mean,
the moment he has a sack and he's doing the HBK celebration, it's going viral on Twitter. That video, that GIF is out there. I mean, NFL Red Zone is not necessarily showing every sack, but when you make big plays, when you have a pick six in week one back-to-back years, like people see that, but I agree with you in general. The perception within, I think, fan bases, regionally, locally, whatever is, that everything that you see is what the national people see, and they just don't. I have no idea why this guy popped in my mind, but like my dude Booger McFarland. Booger McFarland might not know that Maurice Harris caught 10 balls for 100 yards in a game. You know, that was like, remember that, I don't even know what game, Atlanta game, I think it was. If I could pull that for a second.
I think it was against the Vikings. I remember that game against the Vikings where he had that leaping touchdown.
He had a silly catch in that game. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure, I don't know why I remember this, but I think it was that Falcons game where they got blown out and Atlanta worked them at FedEx Field and they just kind of in garbage time, maybe New England or something. But he put up numbers. But my point is, nationally, they don't know that. Like, we're living and dying with every drive. They're not doing that. So there is something to be said for that. But I like that. I like that debate, and I like that you you took him to church a little bit there.
A little bit, like. You know. I like to bring some stats to the table every now and then.
That's how I love a good debate. You want to come at me with your anecdotes? That's fine. Here's my numbers. Well done. All right, my top five reasons for watching the Nats the rest of the way. I'm going to breeze through these, and then we'll get you a weather report. Ryan, do me a favor. Pull up Philadelphia weather. We'll get to that in just a second before we get out of here.
Brain's got that already, so it's all good.
Oh, you don't even have to pull it up because you're a meteorologist who knows every city's weather all the time. Number five reason to keep watching the Nats the rest of the way, Luke Voit could be a little bit interesting. Let's see if he hits a couple of bombs, runs into one, kind of keeps his top button undone. He shows a little chest hair. Wearing number 34, a la Bryce Harper, which I dig. Number four, Luis Garcia. This is your future second baseman. Could be an impact bat for this team. He cannot play shortstop. I think that has been proven at this point, but we will see him continue to take, ideally, to the middle of the lineup. He's going to be hitting second, I believe, for the foreseeable future. Number three reason to keep watching the Nationals, K-Bert Ruiz, the catcher. Long-term answer, I think, behind the plate. Second highest number of runners thrown out behind JT Realmuto this season. Just hit a home run on Wednesday at Nats Park. I want to see the rest of the way if he can hit for more power. It's just four homers on the year. If he hits three or four the rest of the way and doubles that up in his final few weeks, that would be huge. So that's something I'll be monitoring. Number two reason to keep watching the Nationals amid the disaster that will be in the weeks ahead, C.J. Abrams going to debut at some point, and Mackenzie Gore, what happens with him? I mean, there is a chance he pitches for this team in the show. I guess they could shut him down possibly, but one way or the other, what happens with Abrams, who they sent to AAA? What happens with Gore, who's rehabbing? The two major leaguers that they got back other than Voit, of the young talent in that deal, those five players that matter from the Padres, Abrams and Gore in the show would be a big deal. And then finally, my number one reason to keep watching, Cade Cavalli, at some point is coming to the big leagues. Going to be some struggles. There's going to be some good and some bad. He'll be overpowering. He'll touch 99 in starts. But eventually, they're going to have to let him pitch in a big league game, whether they want to or not. It's going to have to happen. They can only find so many 37-year-olds who pitched here in years past to start who are in game shape before eventually they have to summon Cade Cavalli to the big leagues. My number one reason for Nats fans to stay interested in the weeks ahead. Speaking of the Nationals, each and every night before the show ends, we give you a weather report ahead of their game. So let's do that right now. Game day weather brought to you by Pepco. Storm season is here, and we know a little prep makes a big difference. Get storm informed at pepco.com/stormprep. Show meteorologist Ryan Clary.
All right, so right now it's 90 degrees in Philadelphia. It's going to be dropping until the low 80s at about 10 o'clock tonight, where it's going to be about 81 degrees. We have about a 50% chance of rain from 7 to 10 p.m. tonight. but I wouldn't bring a poncho to Citizens Bank Park.
Whoa.
You're going to stay dry. There won't even be a cloud in the sky. It's a beautiful night for baseball.
50% chance of rain, not a cloud in the sky.
No, 15.
Oh, 15, 15. I'm sorry.
15.
That seems mathematically rough, but hey, when has Ryan been wrong before?
I haven't.
11% of the time, his forecasts are right every time. He's like a less successful version of Sex Panther, I believe. For Danny, who's not here on vacation. No, you know what? Danny can kick rocks. He's at the beach and left us high and dry. I like the guy, but not today. Not for him. For Darius and for Ryan, who worked hard with me. Grant saying so long. Thank you so much for listening. We are back at it at 2 o'clock on Monday.
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.